And we are back in the studio with the ProArtic Quartet and our live studio audience as well, made up of members of the Fine Arts Circle and supporters of WFMT. Perry Karp sitting directly across from me. And Perry, first I wanted to ask you about that gorgeous piece we just heard. To what extent did Harbison work directly with you in creating the piece?
Not really at all.
Okay.
We wanted him to write what he wanted to write.
Okay.
And so when we prepared it, we premiered it 2 weeks ago, and he was in Madison the week before, so we got to have rehearsals with him. But as far as we had no requirement, we wanted him to write what he wanted to write. So,
do you think he had in mind your strengths, your sound, based upon
what you
got?
He did tell us, I don't know. I wouldn't be the best person to ask about that, but he said this was, I guess, each quartet of his has been around 20, 25 minutes.
And yeah,
he was also taking into account what he has done in his previous quartets. And then this was the next stage of what he wanted to write in quartet music. So I think it was mostly what he wanted to do, and that's what we wanted him to do as well. So.
Yeah, beautiful piece. Now, folks, how is it that a group founded in Belgium winds up celebrating its 100th anniversary in Madison, Wisconsin?
Well, that's an interesting story. They started out as students at the Belgian Conservatory.
The original quartet.
The original group, yes. None of us are original members.
You're sure?
Rumor has it, yeah. They were, you know, RCA Victor's quartet in the 20s and 30s.
Right.
A lot of the original 78 recordings of string quartets were done by the original Priority Quartet. They recorded some 29 or 30 Haydn quartets,
right.
Bartok 1, the Franck Quartet, which we're going to play next. And many contemporary composers at that time were writing for the group. The Bartok 4th, for instance, is dedicated to the Priority Quartet, the Mio 7th, and there's many, many, many people. And then Mrs. Elizabeth Spray Coolidge became a big supporter of theirs in America, and that's what really got their American career going. And she was very supportive. And the Priority Quartet was playing a concert, actually was doing a Beethoven cycle at the brand new Union Theater in Madison, Wisconsin,
right,
in 1940. In the midst of that, the Nazis invaded Belgium. And the University of Wisconsin-Madison had already started the idea in American universities of having artists in residence. They'd had a visual artist, they'd had the pianist Gunnar Johansson, they'd hired in 1938. And the president went on stage after the concert, announced what had happened, and said the quartet had a home at the University of Wisconsin as long as they would like. And that was the first quartet in residence position at an American university, a model which has been imitated and repeated by many other universities. But it started at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, so we're very proud of that. And the quartet has now been there for 72 years.
Amazing, amazing.
So that's how that happened.
Okay. Now, what about continuity? I mean, you are the ProArtic Quartet, certainly in name.
Mm-hmm.
Are you also the ProArtic Quartet in mission and approach to repertoire as we look back?
Well, I mean, you want to have the strengths of everyone in the group be part of what's going on. I actually knew the original violist, Germain Prévost, in my first 10 years in the quartet, and he was very supportive of us and very happy that the quartet was going on, so that's always made me feel good about that aspect. And through the years, new works have always been a big part of the quartet's mission, but I suppose what's changed from the original group is we're all involved in teaching as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't the original group was touring exclusively, but obviously at a university we're involved both in teaching and performing. You know, when you hire new people, you want the strengths of that person to be incorporated into the group and change the group, and so that's, I think that's maybe one reason why it's remained viable.
Have you folks, for instance, listened to recordings that the group did from the past and either emulated certain aspects of their playing or rejected aspects? Some sort of reaction to it?
I think we've all listened to recordings and,
yeah,
and been impressed. But
you bring what you bring.
We bring what we bring, but it's always wonderful to hear wonderful artists perform this music. So,
yeah.
But I wouldn't say we're trying to copy the original group in any way,
okay,
except in the mission of trying to play our best and play this incredible repertoire that there is for the string quartet,
right,
and it continues to be an incredibly viable ensemble for composers today. I mean, there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of quartets being written every day today. So composers still are very attracted by this combination.
Now, this group has been together as it's currently constituted for since 95?
Since 95, for 17 years, yes.
Okay. And what about the ordeal of, you know, bringing a new member in? What happens? How does that process work exactly?
Well, that's very complicated. I think it's exciting because you get new ideas and you all respond and you all are getting a different sound than you ever gotten before. So it's a wonderful process, actually. And you look at works a new way, and you keep growing. So that's a big part of being in a quartet.
Is there an aha moment when you know that a certain player just somehow fits?
Well, you know that pretty fast, actually.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Let's turn to César Franck. And, of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, a very important piece for this particular quartet and its heritage, because this is the great Belgian César Franck.
Right.
It's this piece is Belgian, and it is big.
Very big.
And, well, tell us about it.
It's his last major work.
Right.
It was written in the last year of his life. And it's symphonic in scope. It's cyclic, like many of his works.
Right.
Very inspirational. The original group played it a lot, and I think they did the first recording of it that was ever done in 1934. And I've heard about this piece a lot. I studied personally with the original Hungarian quartet. Well, Zoltán Zékai was the first violinist, and I remember him talking about this once, and he said this piece meant so much to him. And he said, the audience doesn't always get it, but sometimes you just have to do pieces because they mean so much to you.
Right.
This was one of those pieces that he encouraged us to do.
Well, it isn't played that often.
And, no, it's not. And it's often very hard to, I mean, it's hard to program a 52-minute string quartet on a program sometimes.
Right. And it's also rather complex.
Yes.
You know, and maybe hard to grasp.
Very beautiful.
It is. Yeah. That it is. Well, let's just hear it, shall
we? Okay. We'll do our best.
Okay. And we will hear now this form movement, this massive form movement work by César Franck, the quartet in D major. The four movements are marked Poco Lento Allegro, Scherzo Vivace, Larghetto, and Finale Allegro Molto. Here's the Pro Arte Quartet, music of César Franck.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And a standing ovation from our audience here in the Levin studio for the Pro Arte Quartet. We heard music of César Franck, the string quartet in D major. And that brings us to the end of this live concert. They began the evening with a work commissioned for them, John Harbison's String Quartet No. 5. The musicians in the ensemble are David Perry and Suzanne Bia, violins, Sally Chisholm, viola, and Perry Karp, cello. The Pro Arte is celebrating its centennial year, and we here at WFMT are very pleased to have been a part of it. Our thanks to these wonderful musicians for being with us tonight. Thanks also to our music producer, Mary Mazurek, and our associate producer, Andy Lamoureux. Thanks also to our audience of Fine Arts Circle members. Next week, as our series continues, we'll have as our guests cellist Pablo Mojave Velha and harpsichordist Gregory Crowell. These concerts are made possible in part by the Elizabeth F. Cheney Foundation, a Chicago-based philanthropy dedicated to arts and culture. And this is WFMT Chicago at 98.7 FM. The British are coming. On May 9th, enjoy a thrilling one-hour onstage performance saluting all things British on WFMT and WTTW. Exciting performers will present a dazzling hour of music, dance, and humor hosted by Oscar-winning actor Jeremy Irons at Chicago's Harris Theater. Featured guests include rock legend Ray Davies from the Kinks, renowned British actor Simon Kellow, the Chicago Children's Choir, and the Joffrey Ballet, and many other surprises are planned. Don't miss the opportunity to be in the audience and to support all the British programming you enjoy on WFMT and WTTW, from Edward Elgar to Downton Abbey. Tickets for the onstage celebration and post-event reception are $50, and they're available now by calling 773-509-5525 or visiting WFMT.com/celebration2012. But tickets are limited, so do call today. Special thanks to lead sponsor BMO Harris Bank. Have you ever said, "The devil made me do it"? Then you must see the Screwtape Letters, this provocative and wickedly witty stage adaptation of C.S. Lewis's brilliant novel about spiritual warfare from a demon's point of view will change your everyday life. The Screwtape Letters national tour has delighted capacity audiences in more than 50 major cities and received critical acclaim. The Chicago Tribune says it's very smart, richly rewarding, exuberant theatricality. The Wall Street Journal raves C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters is one hell of a good show. The Chicago Sun-Times calls it smart, sizzling entertainment, and the National Review says the Screwtape Letters is pure genius. Get tickets today. It's backed by popular demand at the Paramount Theater in Aurora for two shows only at 4 and 8 p.m., Saturday, May 19th. A bonus discussion with actor Max McLean follows each performance. Don't miss the Screwtape Letters at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. For tickets and details, visit screwtapeonstage.com. Air, violinist Anna Kiko Meyer's chart-topping double-stranded all-Bach release with the English Chamber Orchestra is now available online at both iTunes and Amazon. Both solo violin parts of the Bach Double Concerto were recorded by Anna Kiko Meyers on two Stradivarius violins. Bach's violin concerti numbered 1 and 2 are also included on this release, along with a beautiful Air, Largo, and Ave Maria. For more details about this Entertainment One music recording, and Anne Akiko Myers' upcoming season, visit anneakikomyers.com. Critical Thinking is on WFMT at 10 this evening with music of Carl Ruggles. Right now we have some harp music of Ireland played by Carol Thompson on neo-Celtic harp and triple harp, and friends Billy McComiskey on accordion and concertina, Jack Cohen on wooden flute, and Darcy Fair on harp.